So the Life Divine is regarded as a philosophical treatise, and we have a tendency to shrink from thought, from philosophy, partly because we have too much of it, at least in India. We have so many schools of thought, so many philosophies, and we can pick up one of them based on our predilection and choice. But whether we like it or not, philosophy is something which cannot really be avoided, because human mind is hardwired to in some way understand and justify its actions. This is somewhere within, this typical of human mind. Animals don't need a philosophy. They are happy with instinct. But human mind, whatever it does, it must have some justification for its action. And this justification will start from the apparent facts of existence. Apparent because we don't know. We see things, we experience by the ears and eyes, and we have a famous saying, the eyes don't tell lies. In spiritual life, we discover eyes tell lies all the time. Ears don't lie, but that's not true. So it starts with the apparent facts, and the greatest challenge as we go through life, leaving aside divine and God and other things, is that life is difficult, life is transient, and there is pain and suffering. This is something which we cannot say, no, everything is fine. It is transient, there is suffering, there is pain. And as we evolve, we also discover something else, that there is something evil. Now, this comes later. The first thing that hits us is suffering and the transience. Anityam asukham, that's how the Gita puts it. Anityam asukham lokam. So, we have two approaches. One is we want to handle this. The second is we want to understand it. So, when we want to understand it, then we see that there is a need for philosophy. There has to be some basis. If we have to just deal with it almost instinctively, then we have things like, well, revolution flows with the barrel of a gun, kill and loot. Now that's a very animal kind of response to things that we observe. This not to say that inequality doesn't exist, it exists. But unless we understand the deeper causes of things, we cannot really resolve them. This is the basic premise. So there are scientific causes, there are philosophical causes, there are spiritual reasons. And what Sri Aurobindo is describing us is spiritual philosophy, which is different from the typical philosophy as it is understood in the Western world. Typical philosophy is that the mind draws conclusions, intellectualizes. It sees pain and suffering, it may say there is no divine reality. It sees pain and suffering, it may say that intellectual mind that, you know, we have to go through it because we will have a reward in the afterlife. It may see pain and suffering, it may say, well, it's the result of my karmas. So there are several ways that the human mind, based on its premises, all these are all pure premises. Intellectual mind doesn't know. But it bases the premises that yes, there is a God and there is a reality, but I am still suffering, I prayed to him, he didn't help. And it can go to absurd levels. I've seen it even, as I was probably sharing even here, somebody working starts saying, I've been very nice, doing all my work diligently. Here is my colleague who has not been working well. He has been just enjoying life. So he started talking ill of him. And eventually, because he is the one who was sent away from the department, he said that God is cruel, which is so absurd. That no, nobody is, see, this should not have happened. So I said, see, ultimately what is happening through all this? You came here to, yoga means union with the divine. But you are the one who is deviating most from the divine by going into a conception of God that basically he is cruel because I should have met with justice. First of all, what justice is? If justice were to manifest, as mother says, if universal justice were to manifest, none of you will be able to stand. But that apart, we have our own limited idea of justice. And based on that, we want God to run the world. Even if there is justice, there is something like justice. But we want God to run the world based on our idea of justice. So our idea of justice is, if there is somebody who is doing bad, we should punish him. This is a human idea. If you ask God, what are you going to do with such a person? He'll say, I'll change him. Now, we want to see him punished. He'll say, but I can change him. I want to change him. Now, this becomes a big challenge for the human consciousness, because it is not empowered to change. Initially, it tries. We all want other person to change, not ourselves. But the divine is capable of actually changing. That's the whole process of evolution. But it's difficult to understand why there is evil, because simultaneous with evil, we want to see that the person who is involved with evil must suffer. And if we don't see him suffering, we draw a conclusion that there is nothing called justice. This one. Leaving apart whether the person is suffering inside or not, that's a whole story Shobindu captures in that beautiful story called Dream. Or if we have our own idea of, you know, fairness, fair dealing and justice, so we never look at ourselves. And we are all the time looking at people, their surface data. But divine has his own ways. That's why Ratnakar can have a hope of becoming Valmiki. Jagai and Madhai can become the greatest devotees of Chaitanya. Augustine, who we all know, Shobindu used the word, the profligate. So, I mean, loose character or loose morals, so called. So whenever he started believing in divine and God and Christ. So whenever he would say that, okay, but you must do whatever. He says, I want it. I want chastity. But not yet. He doesn't want it yet, because he's enjoying. And this man, when he changes, I mean, when you read his memoirs, his notebooks, diary, it's full of psychic effulgence. If you read this diary of Augustine, all his prayers are full of psychic love. And if you read his life till 36-40, you can't believe that is the same person who has so beautifully undergone a change. So we draw our own conclusions and our own conceptions based on our limitations, but we never challenge our own limitations and our understanding. And that's why we have the blessing and the boon of the life divine. So Sri Aurobindo is enlarging us. Look at things from so many points of view. And human thought is tried. So one of them is, as we said, that, well, all this is Maya, which he'll deal with in several chapters, not just one, because it's a very, the impress of Maya is very strong on the Indian psyche, and to an extent even in other religions. But because the other religions not being so complex, people are beginning to leave it. But in Indian thought, everything is ultimately boils down to Maya. The good, the bad, the evil, the ugly, everything. Now, if you have to explain the karma, so you have a very neat explanation. On one side, it's your karma, whatever good or evil you are experiencing in life, whatever suffering or good. On the other side, all this is a large play of illusion, of Maya, different names are there. You want to come out of it, because if you enjoy today, tomorrow you are going to suffer in one way or the other. Come out of this, have moksha and mukti. And this thought is so overpowering. And that's why often I say that, well, India has fallen because of Mayavad. This is what Sri Aurobindo also mentioned. And people take great offense, because Mayavad is a balm you offer. There are different balms we offer. All this is, you know, it's happening, but come out of it. It will happen. There are several reasons how it is explained. There is karma, there is, perception of the snake in place of the rope. Rope is the ultimate reality. Somehow you are perceiving a snake which is non-existent, and you are feeling frightened. Because you are feeling frightened, you are reacting. But actually, you know, there is no snake. So there are several ways I like to use the word tricks of the mind, with which we have explained creation, or rather left it unexplained and told us, don't try to explain. You are watching a movie. It's a horrible movie. Don't try to understand the movie. Don't try to say who's made the movie. Don't try to explain the movie. Get up and come out. Very logical. That's it. If you have a possibility, switch off. In home, you can do it. Now, the only difficulty is you are attached to the movie. Oh, it's lovely. Let us see. Maybe the hero will win. So, come out of this attachment. Detach yourself. It's moha. False attachment. Now, there will be a good scene. But after some time, there will be a horrible scene. And so, we are given a very convenient way. Come out of the movie. Not so easy, but still. Because it's not an ordinary movie. It's a movie where we are involved and engaged. We are like in a big drama. Where we are all playing a so-called part. And so it's a problem because we are also actors, co-sharers. So coming out of the drama means you have to leave all the issues, problem, the plus you were getting in the drama, the applause of the crowd, though you are also getting a beating. So you have to come out of that entire zone. So the whole philosophy and methods of yoga are based on this kind of detachment, stepping out of the play. And so beautifully mother says at one place, we don't talk about renunciation in this yoga. So why? She says, if you still feel there is a need to renounce, you're not ready for the yoga. You renounce something which you value. So there have been two kinds of thoughts with which man has turned toward the divine. And that's what we read yesterday. One is that this world is horrible, and we'll read it again in the it's bad basically. Even if things are good, they are transient, making you, it's like you had a very nice whatever chart, then you drank water, or you have a stomach indigestion. So it's built like that, and therefore this transient unhappy world, step out of it. This is one part. And the other is you try to understand why all this, who made this nice meal for me, is there a purpose, is there a greater goal? And that's where Sri Aurobindo comes in. That actually requires an effort of thought, an effort of will, because it's much easier to say, oh, horrible, that's the easier thing. But much more difficult to say that if I am going through a certain experience of life, there is some intent, some meaning, some purpose. And here we read last time, yesterday, Sri Aurobindo, only, as I keep saying, only God can say like this. And I know a real story of someone who saw, Chutnarayanji told me this story, that he was carrying the live divine with him and he had gone to meet someone. And he used to meet all kinds of people. So this person was a sadhu, and he saw in his hand the live divine, and he said, what are you doing with this book? So he said, I'm reading it. He took it from his hand, and this is God's book, God's book. I had a similar experience, almost similar, in Air Force, when a man came and he was following a certain path, wanted me to convert to his Guruji, and I said, please, normally you don't feel like getting into all these discussions. So I had on my table always Savitri and the Life Divine, always on my. So after some time, when he kept on insisting, Guruji, this experience will come, that experience, you will see light, you will hear sound. I said, I'm not interested in this. I'm not interested in seeing lights and hearing sounds. I want to, you know, first understand God's play and live out rightly, become one with him, become his instrument. So this doesn't help me. So I said, I have questions. So when I told him all the standard questions that I carried, he said, no, those questions only God can answer. So it was my aha moment. I said, that's why I'm saying here is the answer. Yes, there are questions which were unanswered. And here is the answer. After that, of course, he didn't come. So we are reading those answers from Sri Aurobindo, but we must have questions. Sometimes I feel this is really written for 100 years further down the line. Like the mother said, people will appreciate the value of Savitri after 300 years. I have a similar feeling even for the Life Divine. We don't even have the questions. Because we are so happy with feeling a little exhilarated. We go to a temple, we have bhajans and some, you know, tears roll down, and then we have a meditation retreat and we feel very good and say, ah, I had this experience. We have not raised the questions at all. It's like we are unconcerned with what's happening all around. We are only concerned with some experiences for ourselves. And that's where we see, Shobindo describes that everything, including the most outward act, seemingly trivial, they carry a truth within. And there is a line in Savitri which is so amazing. He says, our smallest part have room for deepest needs. Each part in us desires its absolute. That is so liberating. At least someone understands. It's not like rubbishing the whole thing. That's so easy. So we are reading that, and on page 422, so he says that it's even the feeling of evil is necessary as part of the evolutionary process. So imagine if you explain away everything, and I have seen this, one of the big problems in India, especially, everything is karma. You don't need to change anything. God is taking care, he is punishing the evil. Finished. Because then there is nothing else. He is rendering justice. Now, yes, there is something called as divine justice. But then I have no role. He is taking care. My role is only to leave this world and join him. And from there, watch on miserable poor creatures. So, Sri Aurobindo says, page 422, somewhere 8-9 lines below. But at the same time, our present feeling of this evil and imperfection, the revolt of our consciousness against them, is also a necessary valuation. For if we have first to face and endure them, the ultimate command on us is to reject, to overcome, to transform the life and the nature. Now we start with the new paragraph. This then is the law of the manifestation, the reason of the imperfection here. True, it is a law of manifestation only, and even a law special to this movement in which we live, and we may say that it need not have been. If there were no movement of manifestation, or not this movement, but the manifestation and the movement being given, the law is necessary. So there are other universes. There are other planes of consciousness where this is not the law. You ask the gods, try to tell Indra Bhagwan, although there are stories where even he had to suffer a fall when he tried to behave in a very egoistic fashion. But generally, you can get away with many things. You have a lot of freedom. If you read Paradise of the Life Gods, he says that everything you desire here, there you have in plenty. So to that extent, all this story that you'll have 72, whatever, so has a meaning. There is a paradise like that. But only thing is, you have to come back here and face. So in Islam, they have solved this problem. There is no coming back. You are living forever in paradise. Period. So unfortunately, a paradise where you will go after the day of reckoning. This is a big problem. So the urge to destroy the world is because judgment should come back, come early. See the problem. You are buried in the grave, we don't know for how long. Till the day of judgment, all our belief, whatever it is, it will finally be just there. And we all, because we believe, will have a nice, whatever, 72. But till then, you are in the grave. So might as well finish as soon as possible. See, that's how the logic works. It's a real logic. I am not saying it just for the sake of saying. But what Sri Aurobindo is revealing to us is something very different. That yes, this problem is peculiar to earth. If you go to the Asur Lok, Asurya Naam Teloka, they are fighting and they are happy with their fight. It's like two people who are drunk and they are fighting. Never try to intervene. and say, why are you fighting? All that will happen is you'll get beaten. That's all. They are enjoying the life. Because there the law is like that. Similarly, gods are content in their splendor. Don't try to tell Indra Bhagwan, see why you are drinking, see what's happening on earth. No. He is fixed in his own station. But because man has been given the possibility of becoming one with the Supreme, so the challenge is of the greatest kind. So he says, yes, this is only here, but it is there, which is a fact. Last three lines on this page. It is true, they are creations of mind consciousness. So a lot of suffering and evil is because of the mind's limitations. That's why there is, you know, mind makes compartments, mind makes strong divisions. This is mine, that is yours. So a lot of it is because of that. But mind is only secondarily responsible. In a deeper reality, they are, as we have seen already, creations of the divine consciousness. This is where we see, Shobindra says, I take the responsibility as the divine representative. Where did mind come from? From the divine. So he's not creating an unbridgeable gulf. Unbridgeable gulf is all this is happening. You can come to me, enjoy life forever. But he is saying even the mind has emerged out of that divine consciousness. And there he is wise and there is a reason. Projecting mind away from its all knowledge so as to realize these opposites or contrary values of its all power, all knowledge, all delight, all being and unity. Obviously, this action and these fruits of the divine consciousness can be called by us unreal, in the sense of not being the eternal and fundamental truth of being, or can be taxed with falsehood because they contradict what is originally and eventually the truth of being. But all the same, they have their persistent reality and importance in our present phase of the manifestation. So this is where we see, because in the school we used to have competition, still have, and people are given prizes. Now it's different that how the mother thought about it is different. But someone asked the mother actually, why do we have competitions? So the mother gave a very simple answer. If you don't have that, children are not ready for that greater truth of self-progress. Very simple. So when we are not ready for the greater truth, therefore we have to go through all these things like rewards, punishment, because it is meant for something much greater. But in the beginning, progress takes place only when there is a challenge. If there is no challenge, then there is no progress. This is exactly where India fell when it declared, all this is Maya, there is only the Brahman as the sole reality. So this challenge is given in the ashram school. There is beautiful that when we read it, how mother, at the most practical level, why do we have competitions for sports in the ashram school? Why do we have prizes? Not only competition, they have prizes. And she says they are little children, they won't understand. And yet for studies, she made free progress. But if you look closely, she basically meant that each one wants to progress in a certain direction that you must allow. So free progress didn't mean no progress. So somebody at 15, we know that story, how Taradi's father, he has told me this story so I can share it. So he complained she is not interested in studies, but she has asked maximum questions in playground, thanks to her. So mother called her, what are you interested in? She said, I like photography. She said, okay, take a camera, start photography. Now this is unconventional way. She is not saying no exam, nothing, so there is anything you can do. No, she doesn't say that. Discover what is it that you want to do. So you are allowed freedom for self-discovery. And through that self-discovery, you choose your path. And because there are no exams, no fixed syllabus, no degree, therefore you have this allowance. So this is where it has a purpose in ordinary life. So this is one approach. Then there is another way that we are told that, well, don't try to interfere. Things are fixed in scale and degree. We are humans. We have to live as humans. We cannot live as gods. It's a common argument. But problem is, we have the aspiration to be not only even as the gods, but greater. So, page 423. But if accepting this side of nature, we say that all things are fixed in their statutory and stationary law of being, meaning thereby that even the mind and its creations have a place, divine has fixed them on a grade. So don't try to interfere. Humans will live as humans. And after death or post-mortem salvation we can have. When we die, we can go into moksha, or maybe by living we can arrive at moksha, and then we are no more humans, we have gone into the state of Brahman. So this is one explanation. And man too must be fixed in his imperfections. That's how man is. And many people will say that man cannot change. It doesn't require philosophy. Ask any wife in the world. She will say, man cannot change. Because she is encountering this all the time. This is a fact. Ask the man, he will say the other way. But there is in man an aspiration for change. If there is an aspiration, that means the change is going to take place. There is a beautiful poem of Sri Aurobindo, Meditations of Mandavya. So he says, I have a thirst, and the thirst presupposes water somewhere. In this life I may never find, old nature sits a phantom on the way. Old habits return, yet there is in me the thirst. I will not faint, O Lord. So this thirst has awakened in man. That's why he is trying all kinds of things here and there. And because it's accelerated evolution, therefore we see in this age so much discontent, dissatisfaction with all existing things, which is a very good sign. Though it may be troublesome to people that all the existing things are shifting, but it's very good because human beings by nature now, not only they are programmed for evolution, they are searching for some kind of an ideal. So he says, but if man is fixed, then we can say that man is fixed in his imperfections, his ignorance and sin and weakness and vileness and suffering. Our life loses its true significance. So this is one way to look at it. Man's perpetual attempt to arise out of the darkness and insufficiency of his nature can then have no issue in the world itself, in life itself. It's one issue, if there is any, must be by an escape out of life, out of the world, out of his human existence, and therefore out of its eternally unsatisfactory law of imperfect being. So this is quoted, that look at human life through the centuries. 6 times there is Pralaya, there was Mayan civilization, Lemurian, Atlantis, all kinds of things. So this cannot be, man is forever. This is one kind of thought. And Sri Aurobindo says, if so, man can never really deliver out of the ignorance and falsehood, the truth and knowledge, out of the evil and ugliness, the good and beauty, out of the weakness and vileness, the power and glory, out of the grief and suffering, the joy and delight, which are contained in the spirit behind them, and of which these contradictions are the first adverse and contrary conditions of emergence. If we don't notice the word if, then look like Sri Aurobindo is saying there is no deliverance for man. But he says, if it is so that the divine is fixed, that man will remain forever man, then the only path is, you know, nirvana, moksha or whatever thing. All he can do is to cut the imperfections away from him and overpass to their balancing opposites, imperfect also. Let's grow from tamas to rajas to sattva and beyond. Leave with the ignorance, the human knowledge, with the evil, the human good, with the weakness, the human strength and power, with the strife and suffering, the human love and joy. For these are in our present nature inseparably intertwined together. They are dual. So then there is nothing like a perfect love at a human level, impossible. Because the moment you have human love, it will bring its opposite, hate, today or tomorrow. And that's why this famous phrase of the Brihadaranyak can be interpreted in two ways. The standard way is asado ma sadgamya, tamaso ma jyotirgamya, mrityur ma amritam gamya. Shobindo is giving it as a new meaning, which we just read. He has not used the word, but we just read. Asado ma sadgamya. Release the truth which is hidden in the cape of falsehood. Tamaso ma jyotirgamya, the light which is held back in the cave of darkness. Mrityur ma amritam gamya, the immortality whose seed is hidden inside the mask of death. So these are the two ways we can look at it. Up till now we have heard about going from here to there. The other is discovering it here and releasing it here. So finally we come to that, okay, another standard thing which we hear is, it is all a leela. So we have only switched a name, but leela. The difference is in standard understanding. It's a much truer term and better term. But Maya poses there is a Brahman which has nothing to do with this world. In leela there is Bhagavan which has something to do with the world. But again, at the end of the day, you can't understand, you can't ultimately bhaj govindam, bhaj govindam, bhaj govindam, modumate, come out of this. This is the difference. So he says, page 424, last two pages of this chapter, in that case, the only reasonable explanation of such a paradoxical manifestation of creation. Why paradoxical? Because he is all perfect, all blissful, all love, all. And we are not even nil. We are in minus. At least we should be little perfect, little good, little blissful. But we are in suffering. So he says that this is one way we can look at it. Our creation is that it is a cosmic game. So one way people understand is a leela, a play, an amusement of the divine being. This is horrible, but that's how people put it. And Shobhindra also says that this is, if you put it like that, it's horrible. It may be he pretends to be undivine. So leela one day, it is God's play. He is wearing a mask. Now, sir, please, you can wear nice masks. There was a doctor, Ayurveda doctor, and his patients responded very well. So someone asked that, what is it? You are doing the same thing we are all doing, giving standard medicine. He said, no, it's not about medicine. Sometimes you see, we can only see the surface, we don't see what's going on inside. He said, every time I see a patient, I say a prayer. So what is the prayer? Get well. He said, no. I say, hey, Sachidananda Brahma, why are you wearing this mask? And then I give the medicine. And somehow it works. He said, why are you wearing this mask of sickness? This doesn't look nice. At least wear a nice mask. You have to wear a mask, okay. But why are you wearing this terror mask and frightening mask? There is a truth in this. But then all these are partial truths, not the integral truth. So Sri Aurobindo is saying, it may be he pretends to be undivine, wears that appearance like the mask or makeup of an actor for the sole pleasure of the pretense of the drama. Or else he has created the undivine, created ignorance, sin and suffering just for the joy of a manifold creation. Or perhaps, as some religions curiously suppose, he has done this so that there may be inferior creatures who will praise and glorify him. Just imagine. I mean, this is the most perverse kind of thought I have always felt. And I feel so happy that Sri Aurobindo also says that. But people say that. There are religions which say that. He has made us like pitiable creatures, like worm. Religions which don't have yoga. Not in Indic thought. But he has made us miserable so that we remember him. I mean, he is not worth remembering if he has done this. So, few lines below. But to the doctrine of such a Leela, so crudely stated, there is always the possible, the retort, that a God himself, all blissful, who delights in the suffering of creatures or imposes such suffering on them for the faults of his own imperfect creation, would be no divinity, and against him the moral being and intelligence of humanity must revolt or deny his existence. This is what is happening today. And you see, the mother describes in her own life, she says, for a long time, she says, I was an atheist because I was introduced to the God of religions. And she was, as we know, Jew, and she was introduced to the Semitic religions where God has sent you, he'll punish, he'll arbitrarily give you, you know, reward or punishment. So she said, I can't believe in such a God. And she went through a phase of atheism. And Shurbindo also went through it. And therefore, I believe humanity will go through a stage of purifying atheism. It has to get rid of all these ideas in which its mind is caught. When the mind will be free of all these ideas about God, then we will discover him. And he'll say, bhai, I was right there, so simply there. You didn't recognize me. Sir, I was trying to analyze you based on the philosophies. That's the problem. So here he is reminding us. But if the human soul is a portion of the divine divinity, if it is a divine spirit in man that puts on this imperfection in the form of humanity, consents to bear this suffering, or if the soul in humanity is meant to be drawn to the divine spirit and is his associate in the play of imperfection here, in the delight of perfect being otherwhere, the Leela may still remain a paradox. You'll say, no, the Leela means, see, here you will go through this. But after this, if you have belief, if you have turned to Krishna, then there is an eternal Vrindavan. There you will enjoy in the eternal Ras. He says, still it will remain a paradox. So true, so beautiful. To explain it, there must be two missing elements: a conscious ascent by the soul to that manifestation, and a reason in the all wisdom that makes the place significant and intelligible. And we know Shurbindo has already answered it in Savitri. There is a conscious acceptance by the soul. The difference is we have forgotten about it because we accept it. To forget, to enter into it, because we saw that what is going to come will be much greater than the divine in his pre-creation mode. And which is true. Say, who is greater? Valmiki in himself or Valmiki the poet with Ramayana? Nutty question. Valmiki is the same whether he writes Ramayana or not Ramayana. But isn't it true that Valmiki, who doesn't write Ramayana, though he is still Valmiki, but what is in Valmiki when he expresses to Ramayana, the greatness increases through the manifestation. Manifestation is meant for that. It is meant to increase. It's like husband-wife when they have a baby. So the baby brings them together in a very strange way as that normal love. I'm not advising having children or getting married, for God's sake. But I'm just saying, these are examples in real life where you can connect that, well, any manifestation increases. So the same tendency, I want to be an ascetic, I want to go on a mountaintop. All right. But the same person in union with the divine writes poetry, even for his own joy, increases the delight of being. Now it makes sense that this manifestation where the divine and the human soul came together and we decided, chale. So we said, chalo, kya hoga? You will have much greater delight. But you'll have to go through many challenges. So our small little souls asked, you will come? No. Of course, I'll be there. Not only come, with you, and time to time I'll come. Every crisis I'll come. You call me, I'll come. Okay, deal done. That's the origin. Then it makes sense that we have entered the play out of a choice. Any game, when you have entered the game, you have increased your delight ultimately. You win, you lose, and go through. You need not have played the game. But the moment you say yes, there is a purpose, and that purpose is to augment the delight of the play. This is something we cannot deny. You know, even the award Jagat Mithya Brahma Satya moves with a nice chavar and with nice carriage and gets very badly hurt if you say that, well, you are like anyone. Because there is in man this urge to create, to endure. And there he says something very interesting. The strangeness of the play diminishes, the paradox loses its edge of sharpness, if we discover that although fixed grades exist, each with its appropriate order of nature, they are only firm steps for a progressive ascent of the souls embodied in forms of matter, a progressive divine manifestation which rises from the inconscient to the superconscient. So if we see that how a child grows into an adult, and when a child is going to school, if you say, beta, it doesn't matter, it's all okay, then you say, I'll not go to school, then you have a problem. So he goes through, he thinks that my third standard, fifth standard exams are everything. The parents know that it's not everything. But the child goes through it, and when he is, you know, ready for something higher, he is given. So now we read the last passage, and it's very powerful. Every word should sink inside. Page 426. And where the passage begins, a manifestation of this kind, self-creation or Leela. And we'll read the fifth line from there. There must have been not only the will of the divine Purusha to make the cosmic creation possible, but the ascent of the individual Purusha to make the individual manifestation possible. So it's not just he put us like helpless pawns on the game of chess and he's doing it. Every pawn has a certain freedom to move, or relative freedom to move or not to move. And now what he is going to describe a few lines below, that yes, it's a play of self-concealing and finding. On the contrary, a play of self-concealing and self-finding is one of the most strenuous joys that conscious being can give to itself, a play of extreme attractiveness. Original peekaboo, chupa chupi, original. And you see, in real life it happens. You feel this is the perfect one, and you miss it. Then you discover. Sometimes you go here and there, and then you discover. And it augments the delight in so many ways. So this is what the original play is. So there is no greater pleasure for man himself than a victory which is in its very principle a conquest over difficulties. What would Ram be if there is no Ravan as a challenge? He would look like a, you know, very Sukumar, nice, handsome boy, so lovely, so cute. But Ram is Ram because Ravan comes and he takes the challenge. Otherwise, that's what people in Janakpuri say. That, you know, he is very nice, but he is very Sukumar, so lovely, perfect match for Sita. But see what this foolish king has kept, Dhanush Yagya. What he is going to do with this Dhanush? He is a prince, he can be prince. And it will be so nice that whether he marries him and they live happily hereafter. But we miss the point. We miss the point completely. Rama himself chooses, as the story goes, that one of the stories is that he tells Mata Kekai, because she loves him very much. She is the mother who loved him too much. He says, this is impossible. I cannot fulfill the mission impossible I have taken upon myself unless you do something and send me. My dad is totally blind. He will never send me. And the other two Mata also. But you are heroic. You understand my heroic need. This is one of the explanations. This may be quite true. And then she plays out. He has to go 14 years. which doesn't make sense otherwise. And she knows that there is ultimately Rama will come back bright and strong and as really the Purushottam Rama. So this is where she says that we choose. There is no greater pleasure for man himself in victory. A victory in power, a victory in creation, over the impossibilities of creation. A delight in the conquest over an anguished toil and hard ordeal of suffering. See, some of the poets have caught this mood. When Harivansh Rai Bachchan says, Amitabh's father, Peda me anand jise ho, aaye meri madhushala. He never drank. This was a poetic way of saying that you want to discover delight in the most impossible situations, come. Because this is half the delight. You don't know. A delight in the conquest. At the end of separation is the intense joy of union. See, always together, always together. In olden times, that's why the dictum was that wife used to go to Maike for some time. So that when she comes back, husband value her. If she is staying all the time, then this is one of the problems. Nowadays, you know, this Maika going and all that is gone. So they get bored of each other. So they turn elsewhere. Then they come back because they realize. So when there is a separation, then there is a union. That joy you cannot experience there because there is always a union. So you see, Sri Aurobindo. Okay. The surprise. There is an attraction in ignorance itself because it provides us with the joy of discovery, the surprise of new and unforeseen creation, a great adventure of the soul. There is a joy of the journey and the search and the finding, a joy of the battle and the crown, the labor and the reward of labor. If delight of existence be the secret of creation, this too is one delight of existence. It can be regarded as the reason, or at least one reason, of this apparently paradoxical and contrary leela. And that makes sense. Yes, God plays hide and seek. And then, why? Because the delight multiplies. Now we come back to the original thing. Eko ham bahushyam. So that ananda has to multiply. But we must discover that ananda everywhere. Hiding behind the most brutal masks. Hiding behind terror. Hiding behind terror doesn't mean, thank you terrorist bhai apana. No. Face the challenge. Take out the sword. Fight the battle. That's why it has been said, and with that we'll stop, that it was told in, there is a whole story of Ashupati. The original king Ashupati. And in ancient times, it was said that the complete knowledge of the divine Brahman, divine reality, cannot be given only to a Brahmin. He cannot have it. He has to have in him a Kshatriya. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says, Kshatriya Tej and Brahma Tej both are required. Because if you are a Brahmin, you have not really faced the real challenge through which delight multiplies, wisdom multiplies, love multiplies. And that is one of the reasons for the divine and the undivine. The undivine helps in the full unfoldment of the divine possibilities within us. So we'll come back in 10 minutes and start the new chapter.